From the land to Grand Teutre University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fourth day of August, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com. I'll bring you yesterday's update of the Crop Progress and Conditions Report, along with a look at the Crop Protection Network's projections for tar spot across portions of Illinois and Indiana. The risk is low, but you want to hear about that. Then we'll turn our attention to bioenergies, not just ethanol this week, but also soy diesel. We'll do that with Dan O'Brien of Kansas State University Extension, a really good conversation that includes the 45Z. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us. She's in West Bend, Wisconsin. Hello, Naomi. Thanks for joining us early on a Tuesday, as I need to be out of the office this afternoon. As you and I are talking, the futures in Chicago are not looking very good. A little bleak for the day, in fact. Soybeans down around 20 cents, corn down around 7 cents. What's driving today's trade? And then let's talk a little broader about what you think of this marketplace.
Yeah, so two things driving today's trade. One being rain on the radar right now, and there's more storms building for the Midwest between this afternoon, tonight, and tomorrow. So we've got more chances of widespread rain coverage, some cooler temperatures to go with it in the short term. So that's just taking some of that immediate weather threat out of the marketplace, especially for soybeans. And then, you know, the other part of it would be technicals, from the standpoint that the market last week, of course, we had that big sell-off after the three-week July rally. And then on Sunday night, Monday, we saw the markets test some important moving averages on the daily charts for corn, soybeans, and wheat. And all of those moving averages held. They were either 50% retracement points or 61% Fibonacci retracement points also. So yesterday's technical buying made a lot of sense. So then we had the market work higher on Monday, got up to short-term resistance levels and the top of the very short-term downtrend lines that had formed over the past week. The market last night and this morning did not have enough bullish news to get through those short-term resistance levels. So now we're seeing the market down again. So we have corn down 8 cents here just after 11 o'clock, beans down almost 20 cents, wheat trading 13 to 14 cents lower across the complex. And we're kind of going back into that point where, okay, we're not for sure where this crop yield is going to end up, but with the rain coming through and kind of saving the day for the moment, we're taking some of that weather premium out of the marketplace. So I'm wondering if we see prices now over the coming trading days and maybe into the early part of next week just continue to trade sideways, a little bit lower as we head into next week, Wednesday's WASD report.
I'm looking at the daily chart for December corn. Yesterday, of course, was an outside up day. Those can be really good signs. The charts are the king at the moment when you can't quite find your footing. Money flow is moving this marketplace. It allows volatility, which I think gives farmers an opportunity from time to time. How do you view this next few weeks as it's related to the grain that producers need to take across the scale, whether it's corn and or soybeans, and how much of that they might want to try to get sold if you're of that mind, or maybe not? I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah. So with the old crop corn, we still are, you know, a good 30 cents up off the highs or up off the lows from late June. So old crop corn, I still feel there's opportunity here to be making sales. For new crop, slightly different scenario. I think a lot of folks made sales in May. I think a lot of people made more new crop sales a couple weeks ago when corn was charging higher. got up near that 490 area. And for new crop sales, I would say, you know, maybe pause on any additional sales at the moment. I think people are probably 50% sold, forward contracted at some good value. And then maybe pause here for a minute. And the reason I say that is because seasonally, over the next couple weeks, a lot of times we find our early harvest low for the corn market and the soybean market. It's oftentimes in conjunction with the August WASDE. The other thing I'm very mindful of is how the drought in Europe that hit the marketplace and the news and the pricing in early July, that has shifted the global balance sheet to smaller global supplies of corn, smaller global supplies of wheat. So next week's WASDE is going to be really important. Not only will we get yield updates from the USDA, but they're going to be able to incorporate the FSA acreage data in that. So we could see updated acres for planted. We could see updated harvested acres. There could be a lot of volatility that comes with that. But the bottom line is, unless they throw at us an extremely bearish report, the global ending stocks for corn and wheat have started to shift lower. So it's making the marketplace now have to prove itself. The United States has to prove itself for what kind of grain it's going to be able to grow this year. And then as soon as we get that done, we're going to be looking to see what China was able to grow. There's one part of China that's getting a little bit drier. Nothing overly concerning at the moment, but something to be watching. So we want to then keep an eye on, is China going to be importing not just soybeans, but corn, maybe sorghum, maybe wheat. And then we need to then put our focus already on, hey, South America, Brazil and Argentina, now you guys have to get it right. We need you to have that perfect crop. Or it could really set something up for a bullish market for 2027. But for the course of the next week, we're probably going to see sideways to lower prices. Keep focusing on the old crop cash sales. Those lines at the elevator, I'm still told, are quite long in some places. We might see lower prices in the short term, but then we'll be looking for that harvest low.
All right. Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the latest crop progress and conditions report. It shows, as of Sunday, that national corn progress continues to run ahead of schedule. Across the 18 primary growing states, 90% of the corn crop is silking. That compared to the five-year average of 87%. Corn in the dough stage reached 43% nationally, 5 points ahead of the five-year average. The corn crop is rated 61% good to excellent. That's down 2 points from last week. Soybean development is also tracking ahead of historical norms. Across the 18 key producing states, 88% of the beans are blooming, compared to 84% on average. Pod set reached 62%. The five-year average is 55%. Overall, soybean condition remains unchanged from last week. It's 63% good to excellent. Here are some of the outliers from the Monday USDA crop progress report. Development in the northern plains and upper Midwest is still running well ahead of the normal pace. 46%, for instance, of Minnesota's corn crop has reached the dough stage. That's an 18-point leap above its five-year average. Silking progress in both North and South Dakota, 12 points ahead of average, and corn in Kansas is ahead too. 56% of that crop has reached the dough stage, 8 points ahead of the 48% average. Meanwhile, Illinois corn dough progress matched its exact five-year average at 47%. Iowa slightly ahead at 48%, and Nebraska sits precisely on its historical mark at 38% dough. Looking at soybeans, Minnesota is the standout there, where 75% of the crop is potting, 20 points ahead of average. The two Dakotas and Kansas are also potting ahead of a schedule. Soybean potting across Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska, well, that's on pace. This week's Crop Protection Network shows, as of today, tar spot is limited in scope across the Midwest, other than through central Indiana and the bulk of the corn-growing areas of Nebraska. You can look at the maps for yourself on the CropProtectionNetwork.com website under the Tools section. There you'll find the Crop Risk Tool as well, rather than mapping counties with reported disease infections. It projects the potential for development. The following are percent risk from today through August 20. There is low risk in Champaign, Springfield, and Galesburg, Illinois, as well as Terre Haute, Indiana. Crawfordsville, Indiana has, for the first time this season, a moderate risk, about a 25% chance of tar spot developing. That after mid-August. Kankakee and DeKalb, Illinois are in that same date and risk range. Corn is susceptible to tar spot when in growth stages V10 through R3, that's 10 leaf to milk. Risk is based on probability of spore presence. The Land-Grant University model depends on temperature and relative humidity. Its predictions are only valid when the crop is in a vulnerable growth stage. To learn more, check out CropProtectionNetwork.com online. Each week, we take a look at the agricultural energies. Dan O'Brien from Kansas State University, an agricultural economist there, now joins us to discuss what he's been following. Hi, Dan. Thanks much. We have a lot of ground to cover. Let's start with how much capacity is being utilized across the U.S. ethanol industry and what production has looked like as of, I don't know, the end of the month of July.
Yes, from a couple sources. First, the Renewable Fuels Association on the one hand, and then the USDA ERS on the other. You try to piece together what the industry is doing, and it looks like we've got about 18.5 billion gallons per year of capacity out there, and we're utilizing something around 16.5 billion of it. Of course, some plants are going great guns, and others are being updated or for whatever reason in their part of the country they're not going quite so much, but you still see signals of intended expansion that's out there. Also, it's really interesting to see if you go on the Renewable Fuels Association site and look for the SAF aviation fuels, there are about five plants out there ready to go, wanting to go, indicating capacity to start up, but waiting for the right conditions, right timing, probably regulatory signals on whether to go forth or not. So the profitability estimates for these plants, again, using a typical plant there in the center of the Corn Belt there in Iowa, and plugging in the latest numbers, it looks like they're pretty profitable. Of course, you know, Todd, when we put out public numbers and we state that something's profitable, you always have to be careful because to make sure you're not missing something. But by our best estimates, it looks like we're making last month, we're making about 25 cents a gallon through ethanol plants. And by our estimates, again, with corn oil sales included, as well as DDGs, about 40 cents a gallon. So profitable times for ethanol plants. But I guess we're waiting to see what happens. Well, I think this is what happens when you've got a moderate input prices like for corn again, and there's still uncertainty with regard to where the corn market will go. And as we start getting harder data out of the USDA NAS, and that works its way through the balance sheets. But as of right now, still pretty moderate corn prices, ethanol prices on their own have actually they've been trending down moderately from where they were about 3 or 4 months ago, but still plants in the central part of the country, about $1.78 a gallon. So $1.78 a gallon, break-even prices at the break-even price for ethanol production given moderate corn prices, about $1.58 a gallon. And then, you know, you've got a difference of, you're looking 20 to 40 cents differential in the profitability of the plant. So we look at that, and I can remember, Todd, you and I have talked about times back in September, well, from in the fall, winter of 25, where we were looking at 16, 20 cents per gallon losses, times prior to that in earlier 24 to where we had losses of 9, 10 cents a gallon. So now we're going through a period of relatively decent use of of fuels, ethanol, of course, with its RFS as a percentage part of all that. So at this time, we're showing at least moderate profitability in ethanol plants.
Policy, of course, still driving ethanol. That's the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard. The RVO and the 45Z, however, are supporting both ethanol and biodiesel, renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel. Something is coming out of an oil seed. We think of soybeans, maybe canola. Can you, because you started this conversation on that end, talk a little bit about what you've been thinking through as it's related to soybeans and or just those renewable diesel kind of functions and the impact it has on agriculture?
It's interesting to look at, as you look at background information, that 45Z regulations have more potential for renewable diesel than biodiesel in terms of the profitability of plants, et cetera, that can work its way then back to the consumer side. It's interesting to, again, look at, when you lay 45Z out there and see who the winners and losers are. Generally, for corn ethanol, it's probably a mixed winner. Plants with low carbon intensity operations can benefit. Ethanol margins and corn demand may improve if credits support higher run rates. So it can be a winner for low carbon ethanol plants, certainly a winner. You know, they're able to benefit from what 45Z provides them the pathway to profitability that is provided there. Biodiesel mixed to loser is a qualified manner still benefits from 45Z, but the margins are really highly sensitive to soybean oil and other lipid feedstock costs. Renewable diesel, a winner. Strongest structural position in the biomass-based diesel complex, with growth supported by capacity expansion and policy demand. So renewable diesel, a winner in the 45Z sweepstakes, we'd say. Sustainable aviation fuel, a mixed winner. Again, still eligible for 45Z benefits, but apparently there have been recent legislative changes that have reduced its relative advantage versus earlier versions in the policy. So again, something that remains to be watched. Feedstock suppliers, generally a winner. You know, anything that increases the demand, profitability, the price of corn, soybean oil, used cooking oil, and other low carbon inputs can gain value if the low carbon ethanol, low carbon intensity ethanol plants are successful and they start drawing inputs in. So that's positive. Then of course this works against any plant in the bioenergy world that isn't able to designate itself or prove that it's a low carbon intensity producer. So again, 45Z is aimed to help low carbon intensity energy producing, bioenergy producing plants, and works. It doesn't give a reward, really a major reward, to those that are not. And of course, it helps domestic production, works against imports coming in. Again, they're not able to benefit from the 45Z rewards or the incentive structure, at least as I understand the situation. So there you go. You've got as 45Z, as we have kept watching this, we see 45Z regulations having more clarity to them, and the incentives to different low carbon intensity producing plants starting to work their way through. Then there are winners and losers apparently as we look at how all this finally works itself out. Of course, the policy realm can change, and so we have this certain set of policies as we're dealing with now, and no doubt they're impacted by different administrations here in the U.S. and different guidance that they would give to the Department of Energy and other entities that are, that affect this. So as we sit right now, we can probably be pretty confident in saying that anything tied in with the low carbon intensity ethanol plants or with renewable diesel right now looks pretty good. And we'll see how all the rest of the field plays out.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate all the expertise.
Thank you very much, Todd. Take care.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State University Extension. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Find us online at willag.org. Let's turn our attention now to the agricultural weather forecast across the Midwest, the Corn Belt in particular. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Don. Thanks for being with us again today.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to me about the month of August. What generally it looks like across different parts of the Corn Belt, maybe, and how you see it progressing through the days and weeks.
I think when we compare August to how July went, it's going to end up having a little bit of a different look to it. Of course, in July, we had a lot of heat and dryness in the northwest and western areas of the Corn Belt, a lot of heat. And that pattern, while still very warm, as we go deeper and deeper into August, will be tempered a little bit by a couple of things. We're going to start to see the influence of the northern jet stream a little bit more. In fact, we're having some cooler weather move into those areas here to start the week. But we're also going to see the reemergence of subtropical moisture getting pumped up, curving around that high pressure ridge over the southern plains, that ring of fire, so to speak. So rain opportunities over the next 7 to 14 days for the first half of August are looking pretty good, even in some of those very dry western areas.
Do you think August will be normal by comparison to past years?
I think so. August is punctuated by obviously a lot of heat, but I also see the feeding of this subtropical moisture into the U.S. is providing some adequate and decent rains for some areas that really need it. If there's one place that I'm concerned about where the drier, hotter weather is going to set up, it's going to be Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, maybe southern Missouri. Those areas are going to be missing out, at least over the next couple of weeks and for the first half of August, from any significant rains. We still are watching the Gulf and the Atlantic for signs of tropical activity and don't see any of that yet.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
See you then.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He is in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. And University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.